Hey guys, I am so excited to announce that we are coming up to our Mosaic Conference, November the 14th to the 16th, here in Los Angeles, California, at the Theater at the Ace Hotel. So if you haven't registered yet, go to mosaic.org/conference, and you can be a part of what God is doing. The theme of our conference is the new, which shouldn't surprise anyone, because everything we do at Mosaic moves into the new. We're always looking to the fresh, we're always looking to the future. And it shouldn't surprise us that God is always about the new. He gives us a new covenant. He places in us a new heart. He gives us a new spirit. He makes us new creations. Whenever you connect to God, you're always moving to the new. So how in the world has the church been so trapped in the old when God is always about the new? That's what we're going to be focusing on at the Mosaic Conference, November the 14th to the 16th. Register right now. Don't forget, go to mosaic.org/conference and register right now. We'll see you at the new. So we've been journeying together for the past several weeks looking at the human connection, talking about those unique dynamics of people who seem to know how to have deep, profound, lifelong, intimate friendships. It seems that most of the time when we talk about the human connection, you're talking about dating or you're talking about marriage, or maybe talk about parenting, but we rarely actually talk about how to make friends, how to be a friend, how to create a culture of friendship. And one of the great challenges, even when we come into spaces like this, is that we have a room full of people, but everyone's actually here alone. Because you've been in crowded spaces where you felt so alone in the world. In fact, there's some of you who you may press against people every single day of your life, and you see an endless number of strangers or people whose faces you begin to recognize or whose names you barely know. But when you get alone, you realize that there's a deep disconnection between you and the world. It's an odd thing that oftentimes we begin to search for God because we sense this disconnection with humanity. And our disconnection with humanity makes us aware of our disconnection to God. But oftentimes we try to connect to God and somehow miss the point that you cannot connect to God without reconnecting to humanity. The best evidence of your connection to God, the best evidence of the health and vitality of your relationship to God is how it transforms your relationships with other people. It's that human connection. It's this so common idea, common word, common concept that's so elusive and rare and beautiful. Friendship. How do you become a friend? How do you not only become a friend, but how do you find a friend? How in the midst of all the people, have you ever been around people? In fact, one of the things that this morning Aaron said to me is there are some people who act like they have millions of friends. Yeah, you ever been around people like everyone's their friend? You know, if one of those people, if everyone's your BFF, you don't have one. If everyone is your best friend, you don't have a best friend. And if everyone's your friend, you may not even have a friend. In fact, some of the people who look like they're so overwhelmed with friendships are the ones who feel so alone in the world. Sometimes it seems the person who's more selective, more careful in the process of choosing their friends are the ones who are able to sustain friendships for a lifetime. But sometimes that selective process is so intense that there's nobody in your inner circle and you're there all alone. I saw this meme that said that when you're walking alone, at least you know you're with someone you can trust. When you're walking alone, that means you don't have anyone you can trust. In Proverbs 18:24, it says, "One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin." Let that sink in just for a minute. Because if you want to know your future, look at your friends. One who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin. By the way, if you're an unreliable friend, you're helping someone's life move toward ruins. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. I love that imagery because there's a promise that there's someone out there, and hopefully more than one, who will walk with you with such intimacy, such commitment, such loyalty, that they will be closer than flesh and blood. I do think it's interesting that we're looking at the scriptures, this book, the Bible, This book that people look to try to understand who God is, this book that we've been trained to understand teaches us how to connect to God. And this book is actually talking about human friendships. Why would God, if God gave us this book, take time to say something like, there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother? You need to choose your friends carefully, because if you have unreliable friends, you will come to ruin. This may be one of the most extraordinary insights the scriptures will ever give us, that God actually cares about your friendships, that he cares about who you bring into your life, because he understands the composite of your relationships will shape your future. So what are those attributes of those people that become lifelong friends? And I can tell you, having lived long enough now, that there are people who I thought would be lifelong friends who were just seasonal friends. And sometimes my wife, Kim, would feel so sad because, you know, they used to be our friends, but they're not our friends anymore. We used to be so close, we're not so close anymore. And one of the things you begin to realize is that sometimes you're a seasonal friend. It doesn't make you a bad friend. It just means that you were there for that moment in time. And the younger you are, the more you are in those seasonal periods, because you're moving, you're migrating, you're going from place to place. And sometimes it begins to feel as if you're a tumbleweed and you never place your roots deep, not just in a place, but in a people. But as you live life, you begin to realize that there's certain attributes that you find in people who actually have deep friendships. And one of them is, if you want to find a friend, find someone who tells you the truth. And if you want to be a friend, you have to be someone who's willing to tell someone the truth. In Proverbs 27:17, it says this: as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. This is a great imagery, because have you ever been around iron being sharpened? It takes pressure and fire. Early on in the life of Mosaic, we used to bring a lot of art installations into our community. And so we would put canvases throughout the auditorium and people would be painting. We thought, that's amazing. And then we upgraded a few times and started putting tables in there. And we had sculptors in there sculpting on clay, which was kind of awesome. And then one time we had this very bad idea. We thought, you know, we have a friend whose art form is metalwork, and we should set up a table in the middle and let him do his metal work. And I didn't realize that metal work required metal and work. And he had this wheel and it was going so fast, and there was just sparks going everywhere and small children running to it going, oh, I want to see, I want to see. I could just see small children just catching on fire everywhere. Because you can use your hands to press clay, or use a brush to move paint, but you need fire to forge iron. It says, iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. If you're gonna have deep, meaningful relationships, you have to have people in your life that you're willing to have friction with. And you may think, oh no, I have great friends and we never fight. If you've never fought, you don't even know if they're your friend. You only know who's your friend after the fight. It's only after you've spoken truth into each other's life. Now, I'm not talking about the kind of truth that just, that it's like you're dropping bombs of truth on people that you've never invested in. You know what I'm talking about. You're that truth teller. You talk to a person just so you can tell them the truth you've seen. This is not about judging or condemning people. It's not about being self-righteous or always trying to fix people. This is about having conversations with people that you've invested in. This is about taking that relationship deeper and being honest enough to tell the truth and believing that the person whose life you are invested in, that they care about growth more than you care about growth for them. That's why it's always odd to me. I've had so many people over the years come to me and talk to me about someone else. I guess this is my role. They think I'm supposed to know somehow what's wrong with everyone. And people would come to me and they tell me what was wrong with that person. I said, have you talked to that person? They never do. They're, no, we're just sharing with you because we thought you should know. And I said, well, if you thought I should know, what made you not think they should know? Like, how did you not know that they should know before I know? Are they your friend? And when they say yes, I said, so Why haven't you told them if you're their friend? Well, I just don't know how to tell them. I don't know if they'll receive it. I go, if you're not willing to tell the truth to someone you love, it means that you do not believe they want to change, that they want to grow. You're actually seeing them in their worst light rather than their best light. When you're in a deep, meaningful friendship, you know that person wants to grow and you refuse to leave them where they are. When you're a friend, you tell the truth, you refine each other, you allow there to be some friction, you know there's going to be some heat, and you work your way through the struggle, through the problems, through the conflicts, because you're more committed to each other than the problem. You have to tell the truth. In Proverbs 27, verse 6, it says, wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. I wonder if this is where the imagery of kissing up comes from. You know, and there's more colorful imagery. Because it's amazing how many people just want to kiss up. And the danger is to surround yourself with people who just tell you how awesome you are. To consider those people your friends. You know, the friends are the ones who only tell you what you want to hear. And if you're not wise, you will filter out everyone who tells you what you do not want to hear and filter in only the people who tell you what you want to hear. And then you'll wonder why no one ever told you the truth when your life falls apart. Well, one of the longest standing friendships I've ever had is with my wife, Kim. I know this is going to be a shock to you that married people can actually be friends. But we've been friends for 40 years. And let me tell you, it's hard enough to have a friend for 4 weeks, much less 4 years or 40 years. But I remember when we were first friends, and really just friends, because she wasn't interested in me. I was not what she was looking for. She was looking for something taller and more doctor-like. She was looking for a yuppie with patches on his jacket with a medical degree and a pipe. I was the opposite. I wasn't a doctor, I was a patient. And we were friends, and I would set her up with my friends, and then she would go out with them, and it didn't seem to work out, so I'd set her up again, and we were still friends, and then suddenly we realized we liked each other, we were friends, and we started dating, and we fought every single time. I don't think we ever had a date where we did not fight. In fact, the first year of our relationship, of our friendship, we fought, I think, every single time. I don't even know about what, it just was a fight. And one time we were fighting, and then one of my friends came to me and said, hey, I'm going to New Orleans for the Mardi Gras. Do you want to go? And I said, I'm in. And I said, well, let me run across, you know, campus and let Kim know, because we were dating. And I went and found her, and we'd been fighting, but I said, hey, look, I know we're fighting, but I don't have time to fight because I'm leaving for the Mardi Gras. I'm going to New Orleans. And she goes, when did you decide to do that? I said, just right now. And she goes, oh, really? Well, you don't think it's something we could talk about? We're talking about it right now. I'm letting you know I'm leaving for New Orleans. I'm going to the Mardi Gras. And she looked at me, and I'll never forget this. She said, you are so arrogant. When she said that, I thought to myself, who is this girl that she thinks she can talk to me like that? I need to find me a woman who sees my humility, who, and I don't need this in my life. And so I don't even remember how I responded. I just walked away, got in the car, and all the way there, I thought, I think I'm probably gonna marry her. Because so many times we choose the person who just kisses up and tells us everything we want to hear. And you need to choose the people who lift you up, who refine you, who make you better, who refuse to leave you in your status quo. And I can tell you, after 40 years of adulthood, that I've lost more friends over the years because friendships were built around remaining in the status quo. You need to pick people who tell you the truth, who refine you, who sharpen you, who sometimes wound you. But that wounding is never because they want to cause you harm or never from their anger, but always because of love. In Proverbs 27:9, it says, the heartfelt counsel of a friend is as sweet as perfume and incense. Have you ever needed some input in your life, some counsel, and you went to one of your friends And then they told you what you did not want to hear, so you went to someone else. And then they told you what you did not want to hear, so you went to someone else. And then finally you found the person who told you what you wanted to hear, and they were your new friend. Be careful. You need to go to the person who's going to tell you the truth, not the person who's going to tell you what you want to hear. Deep friendships are built around truth, being shared in love. But you not only need people to tell you the truth, you need people who stick it out with you. Because deep friendships are usually not formed in your moments of success, but in your moments of failure. They're not formed when your life is going easy, because you're going to have some die-easy friends that you think are die-hard friends. But the moment things get hard, they find their way somewhere else. You need to find people who don't bail when it's hard. You need people who stick it out with you. In Proverbs 17:17, it says this: a friend loves you all the time. Wow, it's such a clear view of a friend. You want to know if you have friends? They love you all the time. They don't always like you or enjoy you, but they always love you. It says, and a brother helps in times of trouble. You want that person that when your life is falling apart, they don't pull away, they lean in. They're with you when life is going hard. In fact, another slight adjustment to the translation is, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. You need to find people who are in your life when you're at your best or your worst, when you're succeeding or failing. It is so amazing how many people will like you when you're paying for the drinks. Wrong metaphor. But who's going to be there for you when you can't think of a reason to live? Who's going to be there for you when life is falling apart? I love how clearly Proverbs 27:10 says this: never abandon a friend. If you're a friend, you don't walk away. You lean in. And in fact, one of the interesting things that I've seen over the years, and you can see this on a kind of a communal level, is how many people just go to church as long as it makes them happy or makes them feel good or provides for them something that they want or need. And they just go from place to place to place to place. And sometimes they go multiple places at one time because they're just overeating. They're going from like the spiritual buffet. I've had people email me. In fact, last week someone emailed me, I go to this church in the morning, I come to Mosaic in the evening, and I want to serve. What do you recommend? I said, what I recommend is you stop coming to this church. Not because we don't want you, but because that church needs all of you, not just part of you. And the best thing you can do for both churches is just to pick a place. You say, this is my community, and I'm going to stick it out. I think sometimes the best thing we can have is a bad experience. Because if every experience has to be so good, it has to be so perfect, every talk has to be right on or point on point, then what are you really doing? Are you a part of a community, or are you just here to be entertained? So it's kind of an exciting moment for us because, you know, there are ways we could buy this building. There are people calling me up saying, we can lend you the money, we can make loans for you. But the problem is this: one, we would never make a decision to be so locked into a property where all the money would go to pay for a building rather than to pay to serve and help people. We would never choose to mortgage ourselves into the ground. We would never overpay for a building, even if we wanted it. And the reality is that moving from this building, and when we have to leave with 5 minutes' notice, it's gonna let us know who's really with us. Yeah. Because it's easy to show up when everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be. But when you stick it out, that's when you find community. That's when you build deep, meaningful, lifelong friendships. Never abandon a friend. Love at all times. Be there in times of trouble. I think one of the great challenges in our culture is that we actually have not learned the skills of friendship. One of the reasons so many marriages don't make it is because marriage is actually a decision to live in a friendship with another human being all your life. And if you don't even know how to be a friend and how to keep a friend, it's almost impossible to sustain a marriage. And to me, the greatest success in my life and friendship is that I've had this one friend for 40 years, and we've been married for 37. But I can tell you, a huge dynamic in the friendship scale is parenting with children. I mean, a lot of parents don't even know how to have friends that are their peers. How in the world are you going to be friends with your child? A lot of people go, well, I need to learn how to parent. What you actually need to learn are the skills of friendship. Because there are a lot of parents that are not friends with their kids, and a lot of kids that are not friends with their parents. I think it's one of the greatest tragedies in the world. I can tell you one of the greatest successes of my life is that my son, Aaron, who's 31, my daughter, Mariah, who's 27, are not just my children, they're my friends. Yeah, we can celebrate that. But even as a family, you have to choose to stick it out. Maybe even more so. If you want to be a friend, don't bail when it's hard. Be there for people when they're falling apart. To me, it's a beautiful thing. I have friends who I've had for years and years. In fact, some of them only show up when things are going bad. Because they're low-maintenance friends, and I'm kind of a low-maintenance friend. And when everything's going well, we may say hello or text or email. But whenever things are going bad, I know they show up. I mean, one of those friends is a guy named Jacob. He's Korean. And me and Jacob become friends over the years, and they've come to Mosaic, and sometimes they would go to a Korean-speaking church because they're Korean, and they'd come back to Mosaic. And every time he would come back, it was because something fell apart in my life. I used to have a company with multiple different divisions, and we were running in the world of fashion and film and tech, and we were doing so well, and I almost never saw Jacob. But one day I woke up and my business partner made some terrible decisions and walked away with millions of dollars, and the company fell apart, and I had to take a $1 million line of credit to pull all those things together. He shows up. He goes, "Mal, I've heard about what happened." He goes, "I just want to be here." He goes, "I want to be here for you, but I just think you're sort of like a spiritual Steve Jobs. I just want to watch God as he does the next thing in your life." And we got close. And then he sort of disappeared for a while, and then I had cancer. And when I shared I had cancer, all of a sudden they came back. He said, "I told my wife, he has cancer, we have to go back." So they came back, and they were with us through that whole time. He says, "I know this is not the end of your story. I don't want to be here because you have cancer. I want to be here for the story after the cancer." And they were here. And this past week, I was sending out emails letting people know, we're not going to buy this property. Because the future is more important than a piece of land. And all of a sudden, I get an email from him. No, a text. "Hey, let's have dinner." I thought, oh no, my world is falling apart. It's good to have friends that never abandon you when things are going hard. Yeah. You're facing difficulties or challenges or failure. But you not only need people who tell you the truth and who stick with you, but you need people who have your back. And I don't think we talk about this enough. And I'm going to give you a negative passage of scripture because I want you to see the imagery here. In Proverbs 16:28, it says, "A troublemaker plants seeds of strife. Gossip separates the best of friends." I think this is such a stark warning. Gossip separates the best of friends. I think sometimes we have friends that we consider our best of friends. People we feel really close to, and we don't understand how we begin to drift apart. I think in our culture, in this time and space in which we live, gossip is probably the most acidic agent in human relationships. If you're a person who entertains gossip, you are not creating the space in your soul to create intimacy. And I don't know what it is about gossip. We have a whole industry based on gossip. It's called paparazzi. Right? We love gossip. Can we just be honest for a minute? Don't you just love hearing bad things about other people? It's so exciting. It's so titillating. What? Right? And if you're a person like deeply spiritual, you just say, oh, I need you to pray about this person. Right? You have a way, but you know, you set it up as like God talk. I'm not gossiping. I just think it's important for you to know. I'm trying to warn you, you know, so you can pray. Here's the thing. If the person's not in the room, they're not supposed to be in the conversation. And here's an important thing to remember. If someone is talking to you about someone else, they are definitely talking about you to someone else. I flew all the way down to Colombia for the first time last year, and I met someone, and they picked me up at the airport, and then we had a few days together, and after like the second or third day, the man said, wow, you're nothing like what I heard. I said, whoa, what did you hear? And he goes, well, I heard this from this guy who was offended by one of your friends. And since he was offended by one of your friends, that was associated with you. Like, my reputation from this person flew to Colombia faster than me. And the only thing that fixed my reputation was that it wasn't true. And I got there. And not even knowing it, just being present, violated what they've been told. And now they had to wonder about the person who told them. Because when you gossip, in the end, it exposes you. Because what gossip does is it seeps into our souls a negative posture toward other people. You want friendships? Be the kind of person who speaks well of other people. When you speak well of other people, people can trust you with their lives. And can I just say something to all you singles here? All right? Let me tell you something that happens in LA a lot. You date someone, and that person opens up their soul to you because they're convinced you're the one. That whole month, that entire month, they believe that you are the one, and so they spill their guts to you, and they share their life with you, and you now have a hold of all their darkest secrets, and then they break up with you. Because you're not angry when you break up with them. You were going to do it anyway. They just got there faster. And when they break up with you, you decide to use the secrets they shared with you to slander them and to gossip about them. Nobody here has done that, right? When someone has opened up their life to you, you treat that with respect and confidentiality. You should treat the secrets of others the way you want your secrets treated. Because it will establish a pattern in your soul that you can be trusted by people. In fact, I think it was about a week ago, someone said something to my wife that they thought I had told my wife. And when they said it to Kim, she's calling me up going, why didn't you tell me this? And I said, because it wasn't mine to tell. And I called that person. I said, why did you just drop this on my wife without giving her any advance notice? They said, because we thought you told her. You know why? It's because we think we're all gossips. They assume just because they told me that I would tell my wife. But to me, when someone shares something confidential, no one hears it from me. They have to hear it from them first. Because that's how you respect each other. You need to find people who have your back, who are always talking you up, who believe in you. And by the way, you want to know if you're a friend? You're a friend if you do not allow oxygen in the room when there's gossip. You're a friend when you defend someone when they're not in the room. I am so sick and tired of people saying, well, I didn't know. I was just hearing. If you're listening, you're part of the problem. And I'm telling you this because I don't want you to die alone. Because you'll spend your whole life wondering, why is no one close to me? It says gossip separates the best of friends. Why would you want to miss out on the friendships that God has for you? Because they can't trust you with their deepest, most sacred struggles and fears and doubts and their journey. So let's be a people that have each other's back. Let's not entertain negative conversations about each other. Let's just talk about that. In fact, have you ever just felt like you just can't even live your life? This past week was so crazy for me. I had to fly to Seattle, and it was hard getting to Seattle. I got on a plane, and they said it's going to be delayed 30 minutes and another 30 minutes and an hour. And I was trying to get to Seattle in time on Sunday to speak because they announced I was going there. And so I felt all this pressure to get there in time for the two gatherings, but the plane just wouldn't go. And on the plane, they said, don't worry. If we can't fix this plane, we have another plane waiting for you guys, so there's not going to be a problem. And I believed them. And after an hour, we got off the plane. The moment we got off the plane, they said, I'm sorry, we don't have another plane. We're looking for a plane. We're not sure if we can get one. And I was like, wait a minute. When we were on the plane, you said you had a plane. And I said that in the kindest of ways. But other people were screaming and yelling, and there was like huge chaos and a lot of antagonism. But I know that I can't do that. Even if I feel it, I can't do it. Because I never know. Because suddenly, when I walk on this plane, this guy goes up to me and goes, are you Irwin McManus? I said, yes. I want to go, like, which one, you know, or something. And I said, yes. He goes, oh, it's so good to meet you. And he was so kind and so gracious and everything. But when we got off the plane, I was kind of in distress. I'm trying to get to Seattle. I'm calling. I'm texting. I'm interacting with Kevin at my office. I'm trying to get on a plane. Get me another airline. Get me another terminal. Find me another airport. Find me a canoe. Get me to Seattle. I'm just trying to get to Seattle. And this guy, I mean, he's awesome, but he just came over and, can I ask you a question? Can I ask you another question? And I'm trying to be polite, so I'm saying yes. So I'm answering the question, but then there's a follow-up question. There's a follow-up question. There's like 30 minutes of follow-up questions. And he kept saying, but just one more. And I'm thinking to myself, I can't say no, because if I say no, no more, that's all he'll ever remember. I met Irwin McManus, and he wouldn't even talk to me. He wouldn't answer my questions, but I'm trying so hard to be what everyone wants me to be so that no one's out there talking about me behind my back. And then I wake up, and there are two Instagram photos of me. One sitting on the floor, texting, frantically, but in love. And another one of me on the plane. Both of them were like photo bombs, and I know that it was meant in the most positive way, but it felt like such an invasion of my privacy. I'm going, I cannot live my life without someone telling a story about my life, without me having a part of that story. And then that went crazy, and all these other people started saying all these things, and I only found out as all this crisis and conflict and controversy was going around. And I thought, oh God, it's just so good to have at least a few people who have your back, who will always tell the best story of who you are. Because what you have to have is you have to have those deep friendships. I have a friend who texts me every Sunday morning. I don't know how he thinks of it. He doesn't even live in California. He's in Dallas or somewhere out there. And every Sunday morning, he sends me a long text with bold statements like, you're awesome. He'll send me these Bible verses. This is what I'm praying over you today. You're going to change the world. You just need to know that God is coming through. And I'm like, I wake up, there it is. I never do the same thing for him. I mean, how am I going to say something more awesome than what he's saying to me? I'm like, yeah. It's amazing. It's so incredible to have someone who has your back, who's not even in the same state, but is always thinking and praying for you, caring for you. But just one last thought. If you want to build a culture of friendship, you need to tell the truth. Tell the truth in love, to refine each other, to make each other better. You need to stick it out. You need to make sure you don't bail when things get hard. You need to not be one of those die easy fans, but those die hard fans. I mean, if the Lakers can have people who stick it out with them, why is it that we can't stick it out with each other? You have not had that many losing seasons. You need to have people who have your back. And you know they have your back if they have other people's backs. But you need to find people, and you need to be the kind of person who can celebrate their success. So you know that you found a friend when you find someone who celebrates your success, who always believes in your future. I want to read this particular verse. It's God speaking to Israel. In Jeremiah 29, verse 7, it says this, "Also seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper." Listen to the framework that God is giving them. Because they've been exiled all over Babylon. They've been exiled to cities they do not want to go to live with people they do not want to be with. And they're asking God to bring them back to Israel, to give them the life they want. And God's saying, no, before I ever bring you back, I want to teach you how to live and make this human connection. I want you to know that you will prosper if they prosper. And if you pray for their peace and their prosperity, then I will pour peace and prosperity into you. And what struck me about God is that God is actually for your prosperity. God is for your success. God is for your future. And anyone who's not for your success, not for your prosperity, and not for your future is not with God. When you align with God, you are for people. True friends are for your success. And they're able to celebrate it. I can tell you this as an immigrant. One of the things I loved about the United States of America when I came here, there were a lot of things I had to learn, how to appreciate some things I just never really got a hold of. I could never do the hot dog thing. I couldn't figure out why Americans were all about hot dogs. I transitioned from football to football. But now I've transitioned back to football. And I learned a lot of things while I was here. But one of the things I loved about this nation was that there was this heroic narrative here. You guys believe in heroes. And in fact, when I would travel the world, and I think I've been to over 60 countries, and they would always say the same thing. Say, Americans have this American dream thing. They go, what do you think about it? I go, we love it. We think it's funny, but we really like it. And I go, well, explain, well, what do you think that means? They said, well, you guys believe in heroes. And you celebrate heroes. You actually celebrate the success of other people. That's one of the unique things about your culture. And I can tell you, I've been all over the world, and that's a very rare thing. In most other countries, their cultures do not celebrate the success of their neighbors, of their friends, of even their family. And in fact, I think in New Zealand, they talk about cutting down the tall poppy. Where the poppy that grows fastest, you cut it down. So you want someone to succeed, but the moment they do, you bring them back down to earth. And in other countries like Australia, it's called crab antics, where the crab that's almost out of the bucket, the other crabs pull it back under. And across the world, there's this dynamic that there's a belief that if someone else succeeds, it's stealing from you. That there's only a limited amount of prosperity, a limited amount of success, a limited amount of futures available. And if someone else gets it, you do not get yours. But this nation actually was formed with the opposite view. That someone else's success actually inspires my success. Someone else's prosperity means that there's the potential prosperity for me. Someone else's future means there's a future for me. If that person is a hero, then I can be a hero. But we're losing that. We're losing our ability to celebrate other people's success. And you can see this through a culture of hate. The moment someone succeeds, the moment someone's famous, the moment someone achieves, we start looking for reasons to cut them down to size. I mean, the great danger of not living up to your potential is always trying to pull people down from theirs. And I understand, we live in a city, and it's harder in LA. It's just hard, isn't it, to be for someone else. There's 1,000 actors auditioning for the same 30-second role on CSI. And you are just going in and auditioning, and you don't know what they're looking for. But you're hanging in there. You've been doing it for 10 years. You're almost there. You're almost ready for your breakthrough. You got to do it soon because you're 28. You're over the hill. And you're living with six people, which is another reminder to you of how hard you've worked. And you thought it would be so easy, but it's so hard. And then some kid from Iowa moves out to LA, knows nothing about acting, is not a thespian, has no pedigree. All they've done is drive tractors all their life, but they're being financed by their father's tractor sale. And so they're here in LA and they're paying rent, and you do not like them, although they're likable, but they are paying rent and you're not. So you go ahead and accept them because they're covering your rent as well. And you start explaining to them, this is a hard business. I've been here 10 years. You gotta just go to 1,000 auditions. You're gonna just have to get used to rejection. And you gotta really suck it up. And then they go to one audition. And they went for the 32nd spot. And they got a starring role. Because somehow CSI decided they needed a fireman who came from Iowa, who didn't know anything about acting, who had no real talent, and they were the perfect person for that role. And they come home and go, it was easier than I thought. And you cannot celebrate their success. You're like, yay, I was so happy for you, bro. Like, oh man, that's get out. We live in an environment where we've been trained that someone else's failure is necessary for your success. That you have to walk over people to get to your destiny. So what's happened is that we live in a culture, the moment someone begins to elevate, we feel determined to destroy them. The moment someone walks away from their past and becomes different, we want to force them back to their past. The moment someone starts to achieve, the moment someone starts to live, the moment someone starts stepping into their future, we want to trap them in their past to remind everyone they're not all that. You have never been given charge by God to ensure the humility of others. And a true friend, they celebrate your success and they believe in your future, even when you do not. They just don't let go of you. They hold on to you. Sometimes it will drive you crazy because you want to settle for less and they will not let you. You want to be stuck in the past. They just keep pulling you into your future because they finally understand how God sees people. You know, God's not in competition with you. Your success does not infringe on God's greatness. God celebrates your prosperity. He celebrates your success. He celebrates when you step into your future. He doesn't need to bring you down. He wants to lift you up. And by the way, talking about friendship, Jesus gave us this baseline in John 15, 13. He says, greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. Wow. My hope for you is that you find people who love you so profoundly and so deeply that they're willing to give their life for your success. They're willing to help you achieve your dreams, that they find as much joy in your joy as they do in their own. But here's what Jesus is telling us. You know that friend you've been looking for? That friend who stays closer than a brother, that friend who never leaves you in adversity, that friend who never walks away, that friend who always believes in the best of you, his name is Jesus. And when Jesus says, greater love has no one than this, that you lay your life down for a friend, he's letting him know, I am the greatest friend you could ever have. I love how the scriptures tell us that Moses would talk to God face to face as one friend speaks to another. Jesus does not simply want to be your Lord or your master or your God, and he is worthy of all of those. Jesus wants to be your friend. He wants to know you intimately and personally. He wants you to know him, to walk with such closeness that he becomes your source of strength, your source of hope. That when everyone else walks away, when no one else believes in you, when you feel as if the whole world has turned against you, there's a God who will just come in closer and say, I got you. We're going to get to your future one step at a time. And you never have to do it alone. Would you just bow your heads with me just for a moment and just close your eyes? There's a God who longs to be your friend, who died on a cross so that you could live. His greatest demonstration of love, his greatest demonstration of friendship, was to give his life for you. But relationships are two ways. They're not one way. To receive the life that Jesus has for you, you have to give him your life. You have to invite him to come into your life and change you from the inside out. God will never force himself on you. He always waits for an invitation, even an invitation to love you, so you can experience his love. If you're here and you're ready to cross the line of faith, if you're here and you know you need Jesus in your life, if you're here and you're ready to ask God for forgiveness and for freedom, for a future only he can give you, and the friendship your soul has longed for, I want to lead you in a simple prayer right now. It's just one sentence. It's just one declaration to God, where you give your life to him and receive life from him. Would you pray with me? Jesus, I give you my life. That's it. Just tell him right now. Jesus, I give you my life. That's what he's waiting for right now. If you choose to give him your life right now, he will put his life in you right now. This will be the beginning of new things, the beginning of your freedom, the beginning of your future. Right now, just tell him, Jesus, I give you my life. I give you my life. If this is your prayer, if in this moment you've chosen to cross the line of faith, if you just pray, Jesus, I give you my life, I want to pray for you right now. If that's you, I just want you right now just to raise your hand and say, yes, I just prayed, Jesus, I give you my life. This is my prayer right now. Just hold your hand up high. I want to see you right now. Don't hesitate. Don't be embarrassed. Right now, just hold it up high. Say, yes, this is my prayer. Jesus, I give you my life. Beautiful. Anyone else? Beautiful. Anyone else? Jesus, I give you my life. Think about it. Oh, to be the friend of God. That'll prepare you to be friends with men. Father, I thank you for the women and men who in this moment who've crossed the line of faith and opened up their lives to you. God, I thank you that when we make the divine connection with you, it is the beginning of making the deepest human connections with others. God, I pray that you would teach us how to be a friend and how to find one. that God, you would create a community here of friendships, of men and women who walk together, who love each other, who are committed to each other, who tell each other the truth, who never bail on each other, who watch each other's backs, who, God, believe in each other's futures and celebrate each other's success. God, I thank you for those friends that are closer than a brother. May they be born in this place. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Mosaic Podcast. I want to encourage you to take the message you've just received, allow it to go deeply into your soul, to allow Jesus to do the deep work that only he can do. And I also want to encourage you to be a part of what we're doing here at Mosaic, to go to the Mosaic app and to become a part of the Mosaic Foundation, to become a regular giver and investor in bringing this message across the world. I want to thank you so much for being here with us. God bless you.